Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Born during the Depression, he made it a goal to be a successful businessman, and with Jay Van Andel, founded the Amway Corporation. He owns the Orlando Magic basketball team, has received the Horatio Alger Award and the American Inspiration Award, and 8 years ago received a heart transplant. His name, Rich DeVos, and we're honored to have him as our guest. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now, back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Rich DeVos, the co-founder of Amway. Rich, it's an honor to have you. Thanks for coming.
We're honored to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
A long time ago, young man. I was born in 1926, in the Depression years. My parents were a couple of poor Dutch people, lived in a mediocre town in Grand Rapids. My mother's father worked in the brickyard, and at the time I grew up, he was a huckster. He drove a little Model T truck and went around the neighborhoods and sold vegetables and stuff like that. My father's father was also a little entrepreneur. He had a little grocery store. Anyway, those are the background way back. My father became an electrician, and I don't know when, but and brought up in a God-fearing home. Church was a part of life, and that was just routine. You went to church twice on Sunday. And so I grew up in an atmosphere of faith and of confidence, always with the words in my ear of, you can do it. My father was especially a guy believing in positive images and kept saying to me, you're going to be great. You're going to do good things. You're going to do more than I've ever done, and I believe in you. And he just reinforced a sense of confidence. I think it's a crying need for young people today as well to be encouraged. Anyway, he did, and my mother did, and then time went on. I went to a Christian school system all my life. I was in Christian grade schools, and the Christian Reformed Church in Grand Rapids, not the church, but the parents, run a system of schools here, still do. All the way through the 12th grade, and I was in that school system. My father encouraged us and sent me off to Grand Rapids Christian High School, and while I was there, I met Jay Van Andel. I bummed a ride with him, actually. He had a car, and we both lived on the opposite end of town, and I rode the bike when I had to school, which was several miles, and then in the wintertime, oftentimes rode the bus. Not school buses, just city buses to get to school. Then I saw Jay Van Andel one day. I saw a little Model A Ford riding around where I lived, and I kind of figured out where he lived, and then I saw his car parked at school. And so I approached him one day about the idea of riding with him. And he said, sure. And we agreed on 25 cents a week. Now, that's become a famous story around my life of that 25 cents and what it turned into. But I would pay him a quarter a week. That would buy almost a tank full of gas. Gas was 10 cents a gallon then. But that would get us around in his little car a good part of the week. We first just rode together. And he was a pretty quiet guy. And I don't know if I was a talkative guy or not, but, you know, probably a little bit of a talker. And so the two of us kind of got along good. And one day I said, I'd like to go to a basketball game. And that started because, you know, in those days it was hard to get a car. Well, he had a car. So he went, he finally said, I'll go to the game. He had never done that before. So we went to school basketball game together. And then that just kept growing, and that relationship strengthened, and the years went by, and the war came. And Jay was almost a year and a half older than I was. And so he went in the Air Force before I did. And he said, here's my car. You use it until you leave. And so I did. And then a year and a half later, I went in the service. So we were both in the Air Force for, he was in about 3.5 years. I was in 2 years. He ended up being an officer. I ended up being a private first class. I think I got to be corporal on the day I left Patterson, but it wasn't much. I drove trucks. I repaired gliders, did some pretty fundamental things. Got home. We started a business. We had always known when we come home on furloughs that we were going to get in business. It was always, whatever you do, get in business for yourself. Those are my father's words of advice. And so in high school, Jay and I talked about that already when we were friends. So, you know, someday we ought to get in business together. During World War II, on leave one day, we cemented that we were going to get in business together. We didn't know what it was, but we were going to get in business. And so an opportunity came to open up a new little airport. So we bought a little Piper Cub and signed a franchise to become a flight school operator and, a tenant at an airport. And we were going to charter airplanes, and we were going to teach people how to fly. These are right after World War II, so Air Force guys or military guys could use their college credits to take flying lessons if they wanted to. The airport wasn't done because it was a new little airport, a little private airport, and so we bought floats and put our airplane on floats and taught people how to fly. We had students who graduated flying on water and never landed on land because we didn't have wheels. And we didn't have an airport they could fly on. But, you know, you do what you had to do. Our first office was a $10 chicken coop we cleaned out and set up, and that was our office. And so we started in business with, I think, $700 is what I had. Jay threw in a little more maybe, and his dad signed a note for a little bit, and we bought an airplane, and we started off. And that business turned out to be a successful little business. And not that we made a huge amount of money, but we became successful at it, and then we decided to start a restaurant, and we began a career of owning and operating businesses, some which did well, some went bankrupt. And one day we bought a boat and sailed off to the Caribbean.
When we come back, we'll ask Rich DeVos about the concept of Amway and how they started Amway. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760. WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Rich DeVos. Amway today is a $4.9 billion a year business. It's in 80 countries, with over 3 million business owners. Rich, how did it start?
Well, let's start with getting the numbers straight. Today we're over 6 billion, and we may add another country or two. We are now in India and China and Russia as well, as those numbers may reflect. In any case, it all started with us signing up to buy a sales kit to sell a product called Nutrilite, with a California company that had a plan that had the roots of what Amway is today. And in that business, you could make money selling product, and then you would make some money if you built an organization and sponsored others. So they had the principle of sponsorship, but not the depth of sponsorship that we have today. And so for the next 10 years, we sold Nutrilite. We traveled around Detroit and Michigan and Ohio and recruited people to sell for us, and many of those people are still with us today. But it was started with them, and that we worked for them with that organization for 10 years and built a sizable distributorship. And then there was a fight in that company between the manufacturer and the marketing people, and there was some saying, we're not going to respect the line of sponsorship and so forth, and I recognize that your rights to the people you brought in. And in any case, we said, we are, and we're going to, and we're going to start our own deal then. And so that was the beginning of Amway. In those days, it was called Jari Corporation for Jay and Rich. But that quickly turned into Amway, the American way, which is what it stands for, a concept of giving people a chance to own and operate their own business. The principle always was in making it possible for anybody to start in business. As you know, the problem with most businesses is the cost of capital. I don't care if you want to be a franchisee, they always want $10,000 or $20,000, or you got to buy property or open a store, and so you got to have money. We wanted to build a business where people did not need any great amount of money to speak of, and they could still have an opportunity and start to build their own business. And that's the foundation of our business, even to this day, is to give opportunity to people who don't have the capital to build a business. Now, I realize that that increases our risk because a lot of those people have no business experience, and therefore they don't have the self-discipline. But that's how it began, and all we did after that was recruit more people and sell more product and design new and greater products and begin to manufacture more and more of it and build a big plant. We eventually had 4,000 or 5,000 people working in our plant in Ada. And we still do, by the way. We still have about as many people working there as we've ever had. But our business was blessed, and it grew, and it's had some down years, like any business. Had some tough years, and kind of fell off the map in the U.S. Then we came out with something called Quickstar, and it sort of came back, and doing pretty good in the U.S., but not as good as it should. That's the story.
You've said that Amway is more than just a company. It's a movement to help people help themselves. I learned of Amway in the late 70s, and I went to some rallies that you held, and that's where I first learned of Zig Ziglar, Og Mandino, etc., which revolutionized my life. Why did you put the motivational piece in?
Well, motivation in a voluntary army is important. You have to make people want to do things. You can't order them to do things. When people come and get a job with a company, you say, this is what you will do, and you will be here. But when you have a group of people who are part-timers when they start mostly, you have to encourage them. And you encourage them by having them listen to people who have succeeded or know how to succeed. And while we've had the people like Zig Ziglar come in and talk, and Og Mandino and a whole lot of other outstanding people, and I still see today, they had one in Grand Rapids the other day, and they used a head basketball coach from Michigan State and people like that. So those rallies still go on, just not under our sponsorship. And there were more people than they could handle, some 15,000 plus here, of people who wanted to be encouraged and who wanted to learn more about how to do it better. And those were independent distributors like Amway, and they were Mary Kay people, and they were real estate people, and all those people who were working independently. You know, there's a huge crush of people today who are unemployed, and they say, what am I going to do? I say, well, start selling Amway. Start something on your own. Too many of you have relied all your life on somebody else to be responsible for you. It's time you took responsibility unto yourself and start owning and operating your own business. And so we start rallies to encourage it, just sort of like church, you know. Every Sunday you go to church just to be reminded of what it's all about and learn more about it. And so motivation was a part and is a part of the stock and trade of any business like ours.
Every book that you've written, every speech that you've given, you talk about the fact that the little things make a difference. The verbiage, I'm proud of you, I believe in you, I trust you, I love you, you can do it, versus he's just, she's just.
Yeah, well,
why?
You're just describing one of the speeches I've given a few thousand times, which is, the little words of encouragement change you. When somebody says something nice about you, you remember it a long time. If I make a speech and people tell me it's good, I remember it a long time. And those people who find fault with me, I also remember a long time. Both of them affect my attitude about myself. I'm either lifted up or pushed down. I'm in the business of enriching the lives of people. That's my basic business. I'm in the business of encouraging people to be bigger and better and to utilize their God-given talents more fully. And so that requires motivation. Now, sometimes you get motivation in a big meeting, and sometimes the motivation comes from somebody who says to you, you can do it. You know you can do it. I know you can do it. Now, let's just go do it. And sometimes it's from somebody who says, I believe in you. And so I have a series of phrases I try to teach people, and they begin with, I'm wrong, and I'm sorry. Because a lot of times we are wrong, and we should be sorry, but we don't dare say it. We haven't learned to verbalize when we make a mistake. It'll get rid of more of your arguments than you can believe if you'll just learn to say, I'm wrong. You're right, I'm wrong, and I'm sorry about that. Well, there's nothing left to argue about, you see, if you can learn the skill of doing that. And I get a lot of stories about how I had to learn that and how dumb I was when I was young and hated to admit I was wrong and so forth. And most people do.
We're talking to Rich DeVos, the owner of the Orlando Magic basketball team. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Rich DeVos, the co-founder of Amway. Rich, when you're successful, it's great to have confidence. It's great to have hope. But if I've just lost my job, if a spouse has just left me, a child's just found out that terminally ill, how do I get courage? How do I get hope?
Well, you see, as a Christian, that all begins with your foundation in faith, that God is in charge and He is there to sustain you. And life is filled with ups and downs. You learn to say, okay, that's true. But I've got to take the ups as I can and deal with the downs as best as I can. But I still have to live, and I have to move on. And so the Bible is your best source of a training manual because it is filled with words of encouragement, with a lot of other words about salvation. But that's fundamental. The other thing always is put yourself in the presence of people who are thinking about improving themselves. The problem with most people is they hang around with people who are always complaining. And if all you hear is, let's say you come out of work and you go to the tavern with some guys and all you do is complain about the company and how bad your boss is and how much they make and how little you make. And if that's all you hear, every day you go home, well, those rotten guys, and you get a bad attitude. But if you hang around with the other side and people say, hey, we're lucky to have a job, company's doing okay. What can we do to make the company better? Let's see if we can do a little better job tomorrow and maybe get a little more productive and improve our productivity and our product. Maybe we can help this company do better. And you come back to work with a new attitude of how you can improve things. And so when you're down, put yourself in the presence of people who are thinking in terms of improving and doing better instead of associating with people who are so busy putting each other down.
We're talking to Rich DeVos. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Rich DeVos. Rich has had two heart attacks. In 83, he had a heart bypass. He's had a stroke. And 8 years ago, at age 71, a heart transplant. Can you talk about that aspect of your life?
Well, you know, a lot of people today have had bypass surgery, and the success in bypass is somewhere around 98, 90%, 99%. So we're doing that one pretty routinely, and it's working out pretty good for most people. So they can approach that one with confidence. I'd had two of those, and then I had a bad staph infection, which almost killed me. And so the last heart attack I had before I had my second bypass was almost, it took almost all of my heart. It killed the whole right side of my heart, and I should say the left side of my heart. And it just wiped it out to where it was totally ineffective. So for the next 4 or 5 years, I went through a period of just gradual decline in my strength and my ability to function as my heart lost its ability to keep pumping blood. And as that happened, my doctors, charted it, and I'd go in out of the hospital, get the water drained out of me periodically. And finally, they came to me one day, and along with our son, Dick, that's the one running for governor, and they said, you've got about a year, year and a half to go. Your heart is failing. We know the rate. We know how it works. And at that time, you'll die. And there's only one alternative, and that is to find a heart for you. And so I said, well, let's go find a heart for me. He said, well, we wish it was that easy, but we have talked to every heart transplant center in the United States, and they've all declined to take you because you're already 70 years old. And they don't transplant people over at that time over 60. And understandably, there's a shortage of organs, and that's one of my causes today, is to get people to sign up to be an organ donor. In any case, he said, there just aren't enough hearts, and they got to save them for younger people. And I says, I understand that, too. But my doctor said, I have a friend in London who said he would see you and consider you. And he's a leading transplant man in the world. And he said, he will see you. He won't promise to do anything. He said, I've sent him all the data on you. He has all the facts, but he only says he'll see you. But he said, sometimes he thinks because you're AB positive, sometimes he says he has one of those hearts left over. That's a funny way of saying it, but sometimes he does. And so I said, fine, when can we go? He says, well, whenever you like. Well, this was getting into December, and we decided to stay around through Christmas and told all the children, of which we have four, and said what was happening, that we were leaving for London on the first of the year and for second of the year and going to see what this doctor said. And so we did, and we then learned that our son Dick had been there already and talked to this doctor. Dick had been in Europe on business, and the guy said, well, he said, I know he's a nice guy, I believe all that. He said, but I want to see him, I got to talk to him. And so it was, we went there, and on the second or third, I think it was the second, we went to see him, and he said, Dick had been there, and they told him it would take 4 days to test me and see whether they would consider me as a heart transplant applicant. And so we didn't know that, however. So we went over, and he checked me out, and he talked and visited, and finally, after a couple of hours, he said, well, okay. He said, I'm going to see what I can do for you. I'll take you on as a patient. Let's see what we can do. And it was just like that. Later on, I heard about the 4 days. Now, I tell you this because this is the hand of God at work. What would tell this doctor to do this? I'm 70 years old. I'm high risk. They've been in my chest twice already. Odds go down drastically from that 98-99% when you first start with your first bypass down to 25% maybe when the time they go in there the third time. So it's high risk, and he knows this, and he doesn't need any deaths on his hand. Yeah, so why gamble? You know, a lot of doctors would not have done it just because they don't want it on their record. But he didn't. This guy never thought that way. He said, what can I just see we can do to help this guy? And so he said he would see. And as usual, he said, I don't know when. Might be a month. It might be tomorrow. It might be a year. But we'll keep an eye on you. And every week you come in the hospital here, and we'll watch over you. And so we got a nice place in a hotel. We stayed downtown London. And every Monday we went out to the hospital, and they ran through the routine tests to see how fast my heart was failing and see if they had to do something else to keep it going while they waited for a heart. You know, the Lord first of all, opened the door for him even to consider me. Then I had this guy, Dr. Yaqub was his name, and he was really an Egyptian, but he lived in England for many years. But he was a busy, busy guy doing surgery all over the world. But he had another doctor in place, who Emma Burke, who was personally in charge of me. And she would meet us every Monday, and she would check all the numbers, and then she would talk to him, and he would say, okay, let's keep going, see what we can do. Well, lo and behold, the Lord put in that hospital a woman who needed new lungs. And because they learned that I needed a strong right side heart, not just any old heart. I needed an AB positive, strong right side, and all the other requirements of size and strength and blood tissue and all this stuff. And so, she said to him, she said, if we could get that woman a new heart and lung, would be a better operation for her, and then we could take her heart, which has a strong right side in it, which is what he needs because of his lungs and condition, then we could do both of them. And so one day, 5 months almost to the day from when we first saw him, they called on that Monday. We were going in the hospital, said, come in early today, we might have a heart for you today. So we, of course, hurried on in, and they asked me what I thought about. And I just said, I can't remember what I thought about. I know I remember being in the hospital and getting shaved and getting ready for surgery. And they said, well, hurry it up. We need them down here pretty quick. And I remember those words. And so we went in, and only later did I learn that they had secured on the continent of Europe a heart and lung for this woman. And she was 39 years old. And they gave her, and she had agreed. The next miracle was they went to her and said, would you give up your heart if we could find you a heart and lung? And she said, yes. I found that to be a terribly difficult question, knowing she had a good heart. But again, a miracle in the hand of God. And she said, yes. And so it was that she received a heart and lung in one operating room, and I got her heart 20 minutes later in the next operating room. And it's been running ever since. That time gap is very important in surgery because a heart is only good for 4 hours max if it's out of a body. And every day, every moment it's out, it loses a little bit of its strength like anything does when it's disconnected. It starts to die. And so here I get a new heart in 20 minutes, and it's been going great ever since. But you can see the hand of God at work in things that just were miraculous. The woman is alive and well. She's doing well. I check on her every time I'm in London or on the phone with my doctors, and so that's another part of the miracle.
How has it changed your life?
Well, when you come out of a nerve surgery or an operation like that and you're sort of retired in your life, say, Lord, what can I do to serve you? You kept me alive for whatever reasons. And so we have focused the rest of our time on trying to do things with our children and grandchildren to keep them closer to the Lord. We've tried to make sure our grandchildren have the word. We spend more time in reaching out to other people and witnessing to them about the wonders of Christ and Christianity, and along with making many more speeches, telling the story so I can reveal to them the hand of God at work.
We're talking to Rich DeVos. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Rich DeVos. As an outgrowth of that heart transplant, Rich wrote a book, Hope from My Heart, 10 Lessons for Life, where he talks about hope, persistence, confidence, optimism, respect, accountability, family, freedom, faith, and grace. You want to add anything to that?
Well, grace is the key line, especially the one I worked on the most, because I wanted to make sure, as I do in everything I do, that I make sure that God gets the glory and that we make sure that the way of salvation is clear. And so that was the last chapter in the book. Now, all the other things on faith and positive attitude and the importance of family are all vital links in your daily life. In my many years, I'm 79 years old, so I've been around a little while. And those are things that sustain you every day. You do come to learn the importance of family, of having family. You know, when I went to London, our children immediately said, "We will be there. We will always be there. One of us will be there with mother. If something happens and you die, then we will be there to be with her," or whatever. And so they each took a week out of the month, and they flew to London, and they or our children or them as a family would all be there for a week. And then the next one would come, so that somebody was always there. My doctors, and in talking to other heart transplant doctors, have said, you know, it isn't always the condition of the patient. It's the condition of the family around the patient. We have found that makes the biggest difference in whether they survive. It's having that support mechanism of people to love you and for you to love and for you to care about that keep you alive and keep you fighting to come through the... It's a very tough operation, and you got to have a spirit and a proper attitude to do that well. And so they really stressed that importance of family. In fact, he said, I'd almost rather select my patients for transplantation on the basis of their attitudes and their family support than I would on their just their own physical condition or their age. He said, age is not a good determiner of who will survive heart transplant surgery or who will use it after they get it. In any case, read the book. Go buy it. It's a great little book. It's not too expensive. Get it at your Christian bookstore. If they don't have it, tell them to order it. And if not, then write me, and we'll dig you up a copy, because there aren't a lot of them left anymore. And I'm not sure they reprinted them or not. We still sold a couple hundred thousand of them, and that's pretty good for a book.
Rich, a lot of people are scared about the future. Outsourcing, the price of gas, the ongoing war in Iraq. Have we seen our glory days?
Oh, glory days are what you make them. And glory days of a country come and go as well, I think. Britain had its time of great glory, and the U.S. had its time, and China's got its time right now, it seems to me. Japan went through a strong period, and they still are strong. But as each one of them goes on, and you take Europe today, it's a strong competitor, and Japan's a strong competitor, and now China's becoming the next strong competitor. And all that tells us is that other people in the world are moving forward, and they're beginning to enjoy some of the things we've always enjoyed. And so who are we to deny them their time to come forward? And that means our role changes. That means we have a new competitor on the block. That means we have to work harder and make a better product. We have to use more creativity and spend our energy doing that instead of complaining about it. If you want to sit and complain about it, go right ahead, but then the problem will persist. Once you accept the fact that there are new competition for us, that's what outsourcing is all about. The world is always leaned towards finding a better product at a better price. And it's an economic fact. It's a human fact, and you can't fight with it. So there are certain things like the law of gravity you accept. And the law of competition and people seeking a better product at a lower price is a fact. So go get it. Oil is in short supply, and so oil prices are high. Compared to the rest of the world, they're low. They're high compared to our low prices in the past. But they're not going to kill you, and they may or may not stay up there. But if they do, they do. And you'll have to adjust a few things, and you might have to go sell Amway part-time to pick up the shortfall. But there are ways for you to pick up your shortfall and become more economical in your driving or drive a little less, and those are just how you approach things. But if you want to sit and cry about it, then you are just going to have to sit and cry about it. But in my opinion, life moves on. The Lord's in command, and things are better than they've ever been. And you may have to learn a new job. You may have to learn a new career. You may have to learn some new skills. You may have to retire a little earlier and live on a little less and find enjoyment in your children and grandchildren that you don't have today. But a lot of you will have a much better life if you just change your attitude. and change your devotion to making things better in this world, and instead of just complaining because they're not quite like they used to be. Change is going to happen. And stop fighting change, roll with change, and adjust to change, and life will work out pretty good for you.
Is it possible to be both a successful entrepreneur and a Christian believer?
I think it can't be successful unless you are a believer. You might have economic success, but too many people have economic success and family failure. Christianity challenges you to do both. You have responsibilities to others and to God and to your family, and it doesn't take anything away from your success, nor does it require that you can't be successful. In my opinion, being a Christian in my case has been the foundation of what I do, not an interruption to what I do. And so get with the church and work hard on the rest of the days and worship on Sunday and all the days of your life, and, you know, somehow it all works out pretty good. The Lord will sustain you in the good and the bad. And whether you've lost a job, we've had people who separated from us, some voluntarily, some involuntarily. Some I've had to let go. But virtually all of them have come back to me and said, you know, I got a better job, or I started a new career, or I'm having more fun than I've ever had in what I'm doing now. I'm happier than what I was. Or I learned from that separation that I had not accomplished what I should have. And so, you know, you can make lemonade out of lemons if you want to. So that's that old motivation stuff that I've lived with. And, I you know, I started this business with $50. And we had a lot of bad days. And we had tons of people ridiculing us. We have people ridiculing us today. You know a lot of them. They're all over the place. Oh, Amway, that ha, ha, ha. Well, I tell you, it's not a ha, ha, ha. It is a ho, ho, ho of a way for you to go and for a way to you to improve your life. And so they go together very, very well.
What are you proudest of?
I'm proudest of our four children. They have married well. We have 16 wonderful grandchildren. They all are churchgoers. They are all upholding the faith. They're all working. They don't have to work. My kids, like my son, they're laughing about because he's wealthy because of us, is an admirable soul, and his business experiences and common sense, and he can do things. I'm proud of my children because they haven't just turned into druggies or alcoholics or bums. They are honorable, hardworking, serving citizens of this country.
Many people quit before they even try it one time. What would you say to those people?
I say try or cry. And that's what they're doing. So they're crying about, oh, I should have bought that house when the price was cheaper. I should have bought that lot when it was deal. I should have bought that car when I had that buy that had a chance to. And they spend all their time looking backwards at the things they might have done. And yet they do nothing about today. So you better decide whether you want to try or whether you want to cry. And you cry mostly because you never tried at all. And I have a lot of people in Amway who've come and gone, and they never tried. They never went out to get a customer. They never went to a meeting. They never had a meeting. And they said, oh, Amway didn't work for me. And I said, yep. How many customers did you get? They said, well, I didn't. I said, I know. You didn't even get one. So you tell me Amway didn't work, and you never worked it. You know, so don't sit and complain to me.
Rich, thanks very much for sharing your amazing story. You truly live the second greatest commandment, love one another. It's an honor to have you.
I live in the glory and blessings of God and give him the praise and glory for everything that's happened in my life.
Thank you. Our guest next Sunday will be Doug Ross, the founder and superintendent of the University Preparatory Academy here in Detroit. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. Make it a great week, because anything is possible. Spoken.